to the West Shore History Podcast. I'm Sue Harper, your host. In this episode, I want to describe the life and death of pioneer Stanley Arthur Clark. In a recent episode, I spoke to you about the Colwood Pioneer Cemetery, its history, and a little about a few of the people buried there. Stanley Clark was one of those people. The short history I told of him drew me in, and I wanted to investigate and know more about his life and who he was. Why him? I'm not sure. It was one of those moments that if you're a historian or interested in history, you've just got to find out more. My curiosity was piqued, and I hope yours is too. I've tried to trace Stanley and his family history as accurately as possible. But with any historical record, not everything may be recorded correctly, especially as historical documents from this time were handwritten and information is scattered. But I think I've got it pretty close. So this is what I've discovered about the short life and tragic death of Stanley Arthur Clark. He was born August 1st, 1882, in Stanstead, Quebec, Canada, which is located close to the border with the U.S. Stanley's parents were Arthur G. Clark and Mary Varilla Clark. He had one sister, whose name was Mabel, born in 1876. It's somewhat unusual at the time to have such a small family. Stanley's father was born in 1849 and his mother Mary in 1856. That would have made Mary 26 at the time of Stanley's birth. At some point before 1889, the family moved from Quebec to Machozen. The 1891 census lists the father as 41 and a farmer, Mary 36, Mabel 15, and Stanley 9. It is known that Stanley attended Machozen School. In 1889, at age 7, he was on the school's roll of honor. His father, Arthur, purchased 160 acres, two sections, in Machozen on the 17th of September, 1892, for $160. The 1901 Canada Census has Stanley at age 19, living with his parents, with earnings of $60 a year. On June 6, 1903, Stanley at age 21 married Dorothea Mary Littlewood, age 20, at one of the oldest parishes in Victoria, St. Barnabas Church, located on Begbie Street. Stanley's profession was listed as a farmer. How they met is unknown. Their wedding was announced in the local newspaper. On Saturday, a pretty wedding was celebrated at St. Barnabas Church when Mr. Stanley Arthur Clark of Happy Valley and Dorothea Mary Littlewood of Victoria were united in the holy bonds of matrimony. The bride was given away by her uncle, Mr. H. Henry Moxon, and wore a gown of white over silk with veil and orange blossoms, and carried a shower bouquet of white carnations. Miss Jenny Godson Littlewood, sister of the bride, acted as bridesmaid and carried a bouquet of pink carnations. Mr. Duke of Machozen supported the groom. After the ceremony, a reception was held at the Victoria College of Music. In the earlier episode about the Pioneer Cemetery, I had said that Dorothea was American. This I'd garnered from a couple of sources. However, on further investigation, I've discovered that that information is actually untrue. Dorothea, who preferred to be called Dorothy, was born August 30, 1881, in Leeds, Yorkshire. She was the daughter of John Thomas Littlewood and Jane Godson Littlewood. Both parents of Dorothy had stayed in Leeds and had not come to Canada. Her mother, Jane, died in 1888 at age 36, while her father died in 1902. In the 1891 census, it was noted that Dorothy, at age 8, had emigrated to British Columbia and was living with her uncle, Henry Moxon, and family in New Westminster. Henry was working as a marine clerk. 10 years later, according to the 1901 census, Henry Moxon had moved to Victoria and worked as a steward for the railway. Dorothy was also in Victoria, working as a servant. Her earnings were listed as $120 a year. After their marriage, Stanley and Dorothy would have a daughter, Marjorie Mary, born March 15, 1904, and son, Frederick Arthur, born April 5, 1906. Both were born in Machosen. Stanley worked at the Leyritz Nursery as a fruit tree salesman. Leyritz Nursery was a horticultural and greenhouse business founded by Richard Leyritz, 1867 to 1954, in Victoria. It was formed in the 1890s and was, for many years, the leading supplier of plants in the Victoria area. Its main nursery was located along Wilkinson Road and the intersection of Carey Road. The Leyritz Nursery advertisement from 1909 indicates that the nursery was one of Jenny Butchart's leading suppliers of plants for her gardens at Todd Inlet, which would later become Butchart Gardens. The Leyritz Nursery was a thriving business in growing and shipping nursery products. Known worldwide, they shipped more than 300 different varieties of rhododendrons throughout the United States. His roses helped develop the Rose City of Portland, and his fruit tree stock helped establish the Okanagan fruit industry. Part of the former Leyritz Nursery land along Wilkinson Road near Carey Road is now the Leyritz Park. It was donated to the municipality of Saanich on condition it be made a park in perpetuity. Stanley also served as postmaster for Machosen from 1903 to 1906, confirmed by the Machosen Museum Society. He was also a police constable in Machosen until 1910. April 10, 1911, would have started as a normal day for Stanley. He headed to Sydney with an order of fruit trees and boarded the steamer Iroquois for one of the Gulf Islands. The 82-foot, 195-ton Iroquois steamer typically carried passengers and freight between Vancouver Island and the Gulf Island communities. Cargo on that day included coal, rice, fertilizer, 20 cases of pick handles, a ton of iron bar, 20 bales of hay, and Stanley's fruit trees. But on this day, the ship was terribly overloaded, and things would go bad quickly. Newspapers reported the event with spectacular headlines. Women closed in like rats. Score perish as ship goes down. Inquest shows captain deserted Iroquois wreck. Rowed away in lifeboat, leaving passengers to be rescued by Indians. These were only a few of the sensationalized headlines appearing in the two Victoria Daily newspapers and reported worldwide. Details of the tragic event were reported on April 11th. The steamer Iroquois foundered half a mile off Shell Island 10 or 15 minutes after leaving Sydney at 9:10 a.m. yesterday. 14 of those on board are known to have been lost. 8 passengers, 6 crew, 4 passengers, among them one woman, and 7 of the crew were saved. The disaster occurred within sight of the wharf, where residents stood and watched the vessel go down. A strong southwest squall prevailed, and the heavily laden steamer, which had a big deckload of hay, rolled considerably from the time she cast off. At the entrance of Canoe Pass, she listed heavily to port. The cargo shifted, and the steamer filled and floundered, the deckhouse breaking free and the hull sinking in 14 fathoms of water. Then ensued the struggle for life. At Coal Island, where some Cowichan Indians have a camp, they hurriedly put out with their canoes as soon as they saw the accident and succeeded in saving some and also picking up bodies of victims. They were energetic in their efforts. Two Indians of Roberts Bay were heroes. They went out again and again and again in a small canoe, and it was due to their efforts that Miss Barton, the only woman recovered, was saved. They worked like Trojans. Their work was so admired by the people of Sydney that they have started a purse to be presented to the heroic natives. Cowichan band members were also later awarded medals of bravery. Tragically, searchers found Stanley's drowned body a day or two after the accident. It is believed near Mary Island. He was last seen alive, clinging to some wreckage. A single uncorroborated story has it that he had given his life jacket to a woman passenger. Whether the story is true or if the woman survived is unknown. It is estimated that 21 people drowned in this accident. However, no one is absolutely sure, as passenger manifests were not a requirement at the time. Stanley's obituary appeared in the Victoria Daily Times, April 17, 1911. It read, "The funeral of the late Stanley A. Clark, one of the victims of the Iroquois disaster, took place Saturday afternoon from the family residence, Colwood, at 2:30 o'clock, proceeding from there to St. Matthew's Presbyterian Church, where an impressive service was conducted by the Reverend W. Bach Allen. The remains were interred in the church graveyard. There was a large attendance of friends." The Iroquois shipwreck off of Sydney was recognized as a provincial heritage site in 1978. The wreck scattered area covers 7 meters wide and 34 meters long and lies in some 30 meters of water off of Roberts Point, just north of Sydney. While the wood has deteriorated, the rudder, steam engine, and propeller shaft apparently remain on the seabed. Example of the vessel's cargo remaining on site include railway steel and wheels, bottles of pickled pig's feet, and pieces of dining china. There is also the Iroquois Park, named after the steamer located in Sydney. The propeller from the Iroquois was salvaged in 1980 and sits as a memorial in the park. Stanley's mother and father left Canada later in 1911 and settled in Butte, California. Arthur was listed there in the 1920 census as a fruit farmer. He died in November 1929, while Mary died in July 1949. Mabel, Stanley's sister, had married Charles Hall in Victoria. They both followed Mabel's parents to California later in 1919. Mabel died in 1920 at age 43. Stanley's wife, Dorothy, remarried later that year in Victoria to August Adrian Van Poyenbroek. Sorry if I pronounced that wrong. He was aged 26, an engineer, and born in Holland. She had two more children, both born in Victoria in 1912 and 1914. Dorothy died of cancer December 22, 1946, in Vancouver at age 65, where she had lived the last 18 years of her life with her husband. Stanley's daughter Marjorie lived until age 93 and passed away in 1998 in Kelowna, BC. Frederick, his son, also died in 1998 at age 91 in Bellingham, Washington State, USA. Stanley Arthur Clark was only 28 when he died aboard the Iroquois. Buried in the Colwood Cemetery, there is standing a column monument which once had a gold inscription and a small wooden fence around it. If you visit it today, his grave is worn and weathered, but beneath it lies a man whose history I hope you got to know a little about. Maybe sometime you might consider paying him a visit. Thanks for listening to the West Shore History Podcast. I hope you've learned a little more about a West Shore pioneer. Stay tuned for more episodes soon. Thanks again for listening.